start, big welcome to Dr. Katharina Kohlpointner. She is going to talk about cybernetics and art. And she's now currently the director of LOOP, the Institute for Semantic Media Research in Vienna, together with Sibylle Moser. And Katharina has been for a long time working at Ars Electronica as one of the co-curators or what
was it? I was co-curator and manager.
Manager of Ars Electronica from 91 until 95. These are the books that Katharina back then managed together with Peter Weibo.
Yes, that's very important.
And you're well, I guess you all know these books since we are using them a lot.
Yeah.
And there's also another book that Katharina has been editing, I think, a few years ago called Paramour, Kunst im Kontext Neuer Technologien, Art in the Context of New Technologies. And we're very happy, Katharina, that you took the time to come here. And please give us your lecture.
Okay, thank you very much, Krista, for inviting me to have this talk here today. As a ground information, I would like to tell you two things. First of all, maybe some of you will be surprised that I'm not going to talk too much about interactive art or about that what you are doing here. This has two reasons. First of all, I'm involved in a research project which has to do with another focus on art, which I will tell you about afterwards. And the second, of course, is that you are the experts in interactive art. So I have a few examples about this part of art production, but my talk is not focusing on it. The second I would like to tell you is that my English is not very fluent anymore, so I hope you apologize for faults in expressions or speaking. Okay, I will give you first a short overview of what I'm going to tell you or to talk today about. As I have pronounced in the short abstract on your homepage, I will start with a rough overview of the concept of art as social system, a theory which has been developed by, amongst others, but before all, Niklas Luhmann, who is a German sociologist, who was a German sociologist. He has died, unfortunately, I think almost 10 years ago. So you've told me already that you know him, you're interested in his theories. Is anyone else here who has read his books or articles? Okay, yes? Yes? Okay.
Not all.
Okay. So that's good. That's what I was expecting, that some of you, of course, will know him and some not. So for that, I've prepared it like a short introduction in his basic thoughts. After that, you will hear something about how social reality is being constructed by ourselves under the aspects of communication, action, and perception. And here I will also refer to some topics of the so-called radical constructivism, which you probably also have heard about. This leads us then to my concept of art as aesthetic system, which I will demonstrate with examples from art history and from contemporary art. And then I will talk about interaction as part of constructing an aesthetic system and how this interactive process can be observed within the system. And finally, I will shortly introduce you to the research project Aesthetic Know-How, Language, Technology, Media, which we at LOOP have been conducting since last year and which will be finished end of next year. Maybe I should mention that we at LOOP are basically working with a strong focus on systemic and constructivist theories, as Krista has mentioned before. So for this, the lecture here mainly refers to this kind of approach to observing the world also. What does this mean exactly?
now observing the world in a constructivist or systemic way. Since mid of the 20th century, there have been developed a number of scientific systemic models, which of all the most significant have been theories like, of course you all know them, the cybernetics with the main concept, the one main concept of feedback by Norbert Wiener, or at approximately the same time, Talcott Parsons has worked on his theory on systems, where a keyword or a main concept is the concept of action, which means that sociality or social systems are being conducted or are being constructed through actions. There have been second-order cybernetics with one example like Maturana's and Varea's concept of autopoiesis, which you of course all know about, or for example the concept of recursivity, just one of Heinz von Förster's constructivism. Also then, which I'm referring to very much, Niklas Luhmann's theory of social systems, where he introduced the concept of functionality. And last but not least, what we call today radical constructivism, but already is discussed to be not radical anymore, also within the, in the literature, with the concept of mediality. And I'm following here very much the two German scientists, Siegfried Schmidt and Sibylle Krämer. This is just to give you a short overview what the main concepts of cybernetics or systemic or constructivist thinking are. Of course, as I've shown through the arrows, every concept or every world of thinking is referring to the others, and they're interrelated to each other. Basically, one can state that they all have in common a reference to circular processes and to observations of observations, or as you might call it, second order observations. Today I will refer before all to Niklas Luhmann's concept of modern society and its basic concepts, as well as to Siegfried Schmidt's concept of art as a media offer, how he calls it. Luhmann assumes that modern society consists of so-called functionally differentiated social subsystems. For instance, here we have a social system which is constructed by its elements. The elements, Luhmann says, are just the communications. So the elements of a system are not individuals, things, objects, institutions, or whatever, but it's only the communications which are conducted within the system, who or which construct the system. The system is closed through its borders, and outside the environment of the system is its typical feature is that it's more complex than the social system itself. Each system in society has a function for the whole society, and what Luhmann calls a horizon of meaning, in German it's Sinnhorizont. This horizon of meaning within a social system is permanently being processed by these communications along a so-called binary code. I will talk about this later a bit more detailed. So for example, if we have here the art system, which is a subsystem within modern society, which is constructed through its elements, its communications on art. But there are, of course, within society other systems, like, for example, the political system or some other systems. They all are environments to the art system. There are also intersections between these systems where they correlate with each other. And as I said before, as individuals are not elements of a system but environment of a system, there are not only social systems but also psychic systems outside of the environment of the art system. So for instance, we have here an individual, for instance an artist, who is a so-called psychic system, referring to Luhmann, and she or he is of course environment to the art system, but he or she is also has an intersection with the art system. Then there are other individuals, like for instance a recipient. He or she is also a psychic system, and he or she is also correlated to the system through an intersection space. These spaces of intersections calls Luhmann structural couplings. This means that every system is structurally coupled with other systems, which means that they provide functions to each other. So for instance, politics provide, for example, like fundings for artists so that they can work without being obliged to sell the artwork immediately. Or the art system provides innovations and creativity to the political system, so that the political system can also think about new ideas, think about new political, maybe, developments. So this is just an overview of how these subsystems within modern societies are interrelated to each other. Luhmann has described how since the 18th century art has developed as a part of society which is characterized by several features, which are before all the system's function for society as a whole, as I said before, its so-called binary code and its symbolically generalized communication medium. So art's function for the whole society is what Luhmann calls the creation of world contingency, which means that within the art system everything is possible which is not possible in other systems. So art can make possible everything because there is no direct use. Yeah, it doesn't have to have a direct immediate use art. More exactly, this says that art is able to observe itself and others and other systems, and also at least can point to the blind spots of observing operations within other systems, observing operations or its own observing operations. The symbolically generated communication medium of the art system for Luhmann is the artwork itself. He says all communications within this art system are being conducted on the question if something is art or if something is not art, but also on the about the questions about how this artwork is. Is it beautiful or is it not beautiful? Is it sensible or is it not, or is it senseless? So I don't go further into the details here now, but I will take out now as an example the artist as a psychic system, which is strongly coupled to the art system, as I've shown you before. How does she or he construct social reality? As I've mentioned before, she does it through communication, through action, and perception. These three aspects are, again, in a circular way, very much interrelated to each other, which means that communication always includes aspects of action and perception, perception always includes aspects of communication and action and so on. So for instance, the artist is communicating when he or she is like producing artworks. When he or she is reading reviews, can you read this? Is it large enough? When she's watching TV, of course. When she's observing others' artworks, writing emails, traveling, making love, talking, whatever you do, it's always communication. Of course, the communication within the art system has to refer to the art system, otherwise it's referring to another social system. But we could say maybe making love is not related to the art system immediately, directly, but sometimes it is, like there have been some artworks where making love was a topic. So the same is true for action, also producing artworks, reading reviews, traveling, writing emails, and so on, observing others' artworks. Is action and through action construction of social reality. And the same is true, of course, for perception. So you can see that everything which is communicated, perceived, and acted is a part of constructing social reality and always has elements of the other two aspects integrated. The same is true for instance, a recipient. He or she is also communicating, acting, and perceiving, and by this constructing social reality. She might be observing artworks, reflecting maybe on artworks, watching TV also, making love, traveling, and so on. Let's go on with the aspect of communication now. Siegfried Schmidt, who I mentioned before, I have a book of his here, so if somebody's interested in me, where is it now, Krista?
Maybe I'll show you afterwards.
I'll show you afterwards. Here it is, okay. Kalte Faszination, for example, cold fascination, he's dealing with media, culture, and science, but also with other topics. So the concept of communication is very important for him. He describes artworks, in contrary to Luhmann, who has conceived them as the, as I told you before, symbolically generalized media of the art system. So Schmidt describes artworks as so-called communication or media offers, or even perception offers. So what does this mean now? The aim of an artwork for Siegfried Schmidt is before all to attract attention. And this can be done or happens only if there, so says Schmidt, is enough complexity as well as complicatedness, I can't really, kompliziertheit translate, in the artwork. If there's not enough complexity, if it's too simple, then he says the artwork is boring us. He also states that art only is what is being communicated as art, as we've heard before. This is also something Luhmann said. And these processes of communication lead to differences between experts and amateurs, for example, but also between the art system and other social systems, like politics, law, or economy. As you know for sure, like quarrels about is something art or is it not art, people from, let's say, the religious system or people who are very attached to the religious system would very often say something is not art, which in the art system still is considered as an artwork. And these communications, which are done permanently, on what art is at all, have to go on and on. And they lead, for instance, even to phenomena like the art and language group, you know them. It was an artist, still an artist group, with Joseph Koschut and also Sol Lewitt, for example, in the 60s, and they said, the communication on art is already art itself. So they were only writing text about art and they declared it being art. So therefore language for Schmidt, it has a very important function within this process, this communication process. Through the communication, language enables the art system's autopoietic reproduction. For Schmidt, therefore, art works only have the role of being examples for art communication, and, which is very important, and we were talking before shortly, the on and on production of new artworks is a necessary requirement for communications on art, and the ability for the system to reproduce itself. So if the communication on art would stop, the system wouldn't exist anymore. So, for instance, we have here an artist, again, a so-called psychic system, and on the other side, we have the recipient, also a psychic system, and they are starting to communicate with each other. How are they doing this now? How are they communicating? They are communicating by means of the communication offers, as Schmidt calls it. And communications offers, what are they? For instance, speech is a very everyday communication offer, but also body gestures, texts, of course, advertising, everything, and artworks. They are communication offers. What is important for us here is that these communication offers are based on the decisions of the artist, respectively the recipient. As you know, everyday communication, you don't really think about it. I'm not thinking about every word I'm saying because it's just automatically that I use it. I'm not thinking about what I'm doing with my hands when I'm talking to you. I'm not thinking very much when I come in the morning and say good morning. So these communication offers are called schematized. So these are schemes that are very reliable for our everyday communication, and we don't really think very much about it. We think then much about it when they are in the answers are irritating. Like if I say good morning to you in the morning and somebody says, would say, what do you mean with a good morning? It's a terrible morning, well, and so on. This would be a bit irritating because good morning means not only that it is a good morning, but that I wish you all a good morning. It's similar to the concept of action. Within the circular process of communication between an artist and a recipient, here it's important to say that Schmidt has introduced also the concept of so-called actants, people or individuals who are acting related to the system, in our case to the art system. He widens Luhmann's concept of communication as the only systems element to a so-called Mehrkomponentensystem, which I have translated into system of numerous components. It's not just communication is a component of the system, but he suggests that there must be also observed the actants, the media offers, the institutions of a system, like your university here, like museums, like exhibition rooms, the communications as we've done, the interactions between institutions and individuals and so on, and the symbolic orders. For him, culture is a symbolic order, it's a program for a socially reliable communicative interpretation of a society's reality model. Not to make it too complicated, I will focus only on some of these aspects. Before all, as I said, the communications, interactions, and actants aspects. For, like, the action comes into play when, for instance, the artist starts to produce an artwork. This is begun by decisions on, for instance, media, forms, materials, processes, and so on. I was very happy when I could see Laurent's studio before when he saw all the cables and all the material which can be really touched, because this is our traditional idea of material. But of course material would also include ideas, programming languages, and so on. So the artist has to make decisions, and I'm convinced that all of you who are artists make these decisions very, very consciously, and very you're very conscious of what you are doing. So you don't do any schematized communication or action within this process. Okay, on the other side, if we focus on the recipient, for instance, the recipient is receiving or perceiving the artwork, and she or he does this by means of her or his senses, of course, by seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting, and by synesthetic senses, or some of the senses together, and by knowledge, of course, by unconscious or conscious reflection of topics or of perceptions, by his or her emotions, and so on and so on. So when we look at the whole system, we can talk about art as an aesthetic system where the artist and the recipient are communicating with each other by means of the communication of her artwork, and based on the decisions the artist has done regarding media forms, materials, and so on, and by means of the senses and knowledge of the recipient. Okay, if there are any questions, please ask, or we can have a short discussion afterwards also. So to conclude the whole thing, an aesthetic system is nothing else than the interaction between an artist and a recipient by means of the artwork as a communication offer. I call it aesthetic system because it is for all based on aesthetic perception and on aesthetic decisions or on design.
Sorry, so you would say that the aesthetic system is a subsystem of the social system? It is like the same graph?
Yes, more or less. Yeah, more or less. Yeah. So, just another overview about what the elements what the artist, the recipient, and the artwork are made of, more or less, or what is based, what is the basis of their role in the aesthetic system. As I've said before, the artist has to make the decisions, but he or she, of course, also has some expectations referring to how the artwork could be perceived or should be perceived from a recipient. I should mention once more that, of course, the artist and the recipient can change roles. So an artist always also is a recipient. The recipient might be an artist also. So the artist knows something about how art or how aesthetic media offers could be, should be, shall be perceived. And this knowledge is based on his or her own experience, on her observations and knowledge. And she or he, of course, has to have a know-how about tools, about work, about handwork, and so on. The artwork consists of media, who Luhmann calls loosely coupled elements, which means they cannot be observed by us before they're brought into forms. And to bring something into form, Luhmann says,
that you have to make a decision about a what distinction about which side of a distinction has to be observed. This means nothing else but, for example, if you choose that a painting has to be red painted, you don't choose that it's not red painted. So it's red and the other side would be not red. But if you are on the on the side of distinction, on the red side, you still can make distinctions about which kind of red and so on. It could be light red or dark red. And then you have to make distinctions about, I don't know, the kind of brush or whatever you use for painting a red color on the panel and so on. And the recipient, the aspects of the recipient are, as I said, perceptive preconditions, his or her senses, then the modes of impact, which come emotionally, cognitively, or cognitively, and maybe, or hopefully, a reflection about the artwork based on knowledge again and abilities of self and other reference. So to make this a bit less theoretically, I have chosen an example from art history to demonstrate this kind of aesthetic system. I'm sure every one of you has seen this picture already and is familiar with it. Maybe I just tell you very shortly why I've chosen it, this example, because it demonstrates how an aesthetic interaction between an artist and a recipient by means of the artwork as a media offer can be observed. Is somebody here who doesn't know about the picture? It's Diego Velázquez Las Meninas, which is a very art historically very important work. Velázquez has painted this panel in 1656. Under the circumstances that he has been the court painter of the Spanish King Philip IV, and the painting has been topic of numerous interpretations since its coming into being, as one of which is the theory that Velázquez, with this work, has demonstrated or wanted to demonstrate to the public that painting should be considered as art, which it has not been before, in the same way as literature or music. This was not the case in Spain at that time, so art then was just handcraft work. So this is just a short information about the theoretical discussions on this artwork and why it's so important. That means it had a big influence on the political system. So the structural coupling with the political system then was very strong. So let's just have a short overview of the most significant features here or aspects. What do we see here in the front? In the foreground of the picture we see this little girl. It's the Infanta Margarita, the daughter of King Philip and his wife. She's surrounded by a number of persons. These are, before all, servants and court midgets and a dog. What we also can see here in the foreground is the backside of an easel or a panel, and an artist, we know that it's Velázquez himself, holding the palette and the brush in his hands. In the background, we can see a person, a man, in front of a lighted door. He is identified as a Lord Steward by court. And what we can also see is here the reflection of the royal couple, namely Philip IV and his wife, Maria Anna, in a mirror. So what's interesting here for us is how Velázquez has designed this artwork as a communication offer in the context of perception, action, and communication. We can see that several persons in this painting are straightly looking out of the pictorial scene,
in direction of us, the viewers, as for instance the Infanta, the painter, this Mitchett, and I think this person here also. So this is not something unusual at that time or in portrait painting over all times. But at the same time, when we, as the picture recipients now, are reflecting these gazes, or we're thinking about why are they looking at me, maybe we're startled by the fact that the artist seems to be looking at us as if we're painting us. So this produces, in my opinion, immediately a time loop, an irritation about the time loop, because it means that we cannot be watched by the artist in 1556 at the same time and now in 2008 watch the painting. So we ask ourselves then, of course, if they can't be looking at us, these persons, who are these people looking at? What do you think? Who are they looking at? Yeah, you know it. Yeah, okay. This has been a secret for many years, and it has been discussed over and over again. And there are still other interpretations, but the main interpretation is that we can find it when we have a closer look, namely to the background again of the painting, where the royal couple is reflected in a mirror. So when this is true, or when this is a mirror, which always has been discussed also. Some people in the beginning thought maybe it's another painting hanging on the wall of this room. But if it's a mirror and the couple is reflected, they or the couple has virtually to be in place of the viewer. So then we also get to know what Velázquez is painting in this frozen moment of this depiction. He's painting the royal couple standing in front of the scene and being reflected by the mirror in the background. So we are in place of the royal couple as viewers now, 400 years after this painting. So the artist makes more things visible in this picture than just the scene on it. He points at several components of the artist's aesthetic system. First, he formally includes us as the recipients in the depicted scene by means of the whole setting. So the whole setting wouldn't really work or function if we as viewers wouldn't be included in the depiction of this court scene. Second, he also focuses on the act of reception by means of irritation concerning what I said before, the possibility of the picture scene. And then he brings in the topic of the reflectivity in two ways, namely by means of the mirror question, as well by means of the necessary reflectivity of the artwork, which is based on the irritation I mentioned before. So he introduces, so to say, a meta-communication about the artwork itself, which is constructed by means of the artwork's aesthetics. He also offers us a process of second-order observation. So he is observing the observer who is observing him. Still, I think there remains the question, what is really on the painting in front of Velázquez? But this will stay probably a secret for a long time. So this was a very old artwork in art history, and now we'll come directly to end of the 20th century with another example, an installation by Dan Graham with the title Present Continuous Past from 1974. Who knows this artwork? Okay, yeah, most of you know it. This is also an interesting piece, because it, first of all, the artist has used electronic media for the demonstration of a process of observation. If you have a top view here, you can see that this room, it's a room installed by Dan Graham, which has which you enter here, and which has two mirror walls. This one and this one is mirrored. These are white walls, and on this white wall you have a camera with a monitor installed, as you can see here. So when the recipient or the observer or the viewer is entering this room and is watching this camera, respectively the monitor wall, what's happening then? Through the mirror in the backside, of course, the picture is reflected, but it's not only reflected, so to say, in real time, because the artist has done a little trick. He shows the picture of the recorded camera picture with a delay of 8 seconds. So this leads to the effect that you, as a viewer, see yourself here in the monitor reflected and reflected through the mirror in the back of the wall. But every new monitor picture shows you pictures 8, between, respectively 16, 24, and so on, seconds delayed. So you can, at the moment you're watching yourself, you can watch yourself in the past. So the title of this work already says what was important for the artist, and makes or focuses on the time and space constructed topic of this work. Okay, we have some more time. So maybe one younger piece also by Dan Graham, which is not at all interactive as we would call it probably, but that's why I try nonetheless to include it in my observations as an aesthetic system. Here again, can you recognize what it is? It's an installation in the garden of, I think it was, Biennale Venezia 2005. It's called Curve for ES. It's a three-sided or three-angular installation of, I think it's a metal construction, with distorting mirrors. And this leads to the effect that, of course, as soon as you're watching this artwork, or as soon as you're observing it, you at the same time have to reflect about the media and the materials of the artwork. So you know that normally a mirror wouldn't reflect the environment so distorted, and that you have to move around to really be able to receive or perceive the artwork. This leads me to the concept of Sibylle Krämer, who I mentioned before. She said that forms of artworks only can be perceived through performance by the recipient. So an artwork which is not perceived or performed or through or perceived through performance or through moving or through talking about it is not existing as a systemic concept. Yes, maybe I leave this out now. This is just about the specific materials and the impact of the artwork. And we go on with the concept of interaction. So again, we go back to this interactive interrelation between artist and recipient on the artwork. What is important here now is to mention that it's always a circular process of action and reaction between the artist and the recipient, which means that the artist reacts more or less through production of another artwork to the recipient's communications. So an so-called interactive artwork, and I call it computer-based artwork because it's a difference to another interactive artwork, starts with like the artist designs an artwork through media for material interface design, etc., etc. And the second step is that the artist controls at least part of possible reactions of the recipient by means, for example, of algorithms or the program, and again by means of his or her expectations of impact. So the artwork then serves more or less as an interface between the artist and the recipient, or a communication offer, as we said before. The interface, of course, serves as an interface between the recipient and the artwork. This is clear. So the recipient can control the temporary appearance of the artwork by means of the interface. And then the recipient perceives the artwork by means of his or her senses, and at the same time reflects more or less consciously, I would say, on how she or is controlling the artwork's appearance. Here again we have schematized actions, of course. For instance, when we use a joystick or whatever, we don't think about how we use it. We, of course, think about how we touch a cactus or how we use a typewriter and so on. So these reflection about how I am or what I'm perceiving exactly is always a mixture between schematized actions or perceptions and more or less consciously actions. So the recipient perceives or watches or observes interactive artwork, and he or she is reacting to it by means of the control via the interface, and the interactive artwork is reacting to the recipient through change in appearance based on the algorithm, of course. One example I choose from, I would say it's already art history, which most of you probably will also know, is the piece Zerseher by Joachim Lüsebrink and Joachim Sauter and Dirk Lüsebrink. Who knows the piece? Who has seen it?
I think almost everybody.
Almost everybody, yeah? Okay, good. So I don't really need to explain it very much to you, how it's working. But what is interesting is that, of course, the piece is focusing very much on the basic question of what is an interface and how is the interaction between an artwork and the recipient going. So what would you say, I mean, you're the experts, and what is the interface here between the artwork and the recipient? Is it the camera? Is it the picture? Is it the eyeballs? Is it the brain?
The eye gaze.
Okay. Somebody has another opinion? Huh? Yeah?
I think it's a complex question.
What? The whole system. Okay. Yeah. Of course. It's always. It's true. This, the interface. The interface is again a system within another system. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was thinking about it. I would also agree. Probably, I would have said probably the eyeballs, because that's the one I can control, or the eye gaze. Yeah. The gaze. The recipient's gaze. Yeah. But nevertheless, it's an interactive game between the art system and the recipient via an interface What I find interesting with this piece is that the interface is directly connected. It's not connected, it's part of the human body. So the concept of performing an artwork here is very much introduced with this installation here. So the image, you're constructing the image by observing it. Okay, a so-called non-interactive artwork, of course, is a stupid expression, but it's something which I just would like to differentiate from what we call an interactive artwork via a technical interface. Would be produced like, similar to the interactive artwork, that the artist designs the artwork or produces it. He or she controls only part of possible reactions of the recipient by means of, this is of course not true algorithms, sorry, this is a thought, but only of expectations and expectations of impact. The artwork serves as an interface between artist and recipient. Within an aesthetic system, there is no technical interface, and the recipient cannot control temporary appearance of the artwork, but he or she again perceives the artwork, and this leads us to the production of the artwork regarding the aesthetic systemic process. As I said before, the artwork is a communication and media offer. The recipient can be observed as a psychic system. The communication and media offer is produced by means of media forms and materials based on the artist's knowledge, his know-how, intentions on impact, and so on. And the recipient perceives it with his or her senses, emotions, cognitive abilities, and so on. So this means that the media, the forms, the materials influence directly, of course, the perceiving senses of the recipient and his knowledge, which plays back to the knowledge of the artist. He or she knows about, because she's a recipient herself also, of course, and this influences again her decisions on media forms, materials, programs, and so on. So this is what we call the aesthetic know-how in our research project. The aesthetic know-how means that artists, or our hypothesis is artists know things about aesthetics when they are producing artworks, and one of these fields of know-how is what we call a so-called intermedia know-how. For example, an intermedia use of language. We are researching this intermedia use of language now as an example for intermedia use at all, because it's reducing the whole research field to a smaller field of it. And we call it intermedia use of language because I'm going to tell you about now what exactly intermedia use of language means and can be can be compared with other intermedia use of other forms of intermedia forms. The research project Aesthetic Know-how Language Technology Media runs from 2007 until 2009 and is funded by the Vienna Science and Technology Fund. And its main research question is, how exactly do artists use language in different media? Our method is, amongst others, the most important thing is empirical analysis of 15 artworks by means of expert interviews with the artist. So what we are going to do is to invite the artist himself to speak on one chosen artwork where they use language I'm not telling you more about this because we also have invited Krista and Laurent to be some of our interviewees, and I don't want to tell you too much before about our interview questions. What is very important also for us is the transdisciplinary cooperation with University of Applied Arts in Vienna, because we are cooperating with the class of Brigitte Kovans, the so-called Klasse für Transmediale Kunst, and her students are creating a website which shall be representing our scientific results. We call it a constructivist research process because the interviews will be provided as video, as audio, and as text interviews. And with these language materials, the students have to, or we're expecting them to create a web project using the results we get from the interviews, the scientific results we get from the interviews with the artists. Just to give you a very, very short view on topics we are dealing with, we are differentiating, of course, between language media, like, for instance, voice, print, handwriting, gesture, programming language, and so on and so on, and language forms, like, for instance, a rap song would be a form of voice, or a novel would be a form of print, or a brush-painted question would be a form of handwriting, or a signed, hand-signed gestured sentence would be a form of gesture as medium, or a certain genetic algorithm would be a form of a programming language. So this is how we make distinctions between media and forms, because the distinction between these two is important to find out what aesthetic forms exactly are artists creating. Okay. For instance, the intermedia metaphor or the intermedia knowledge is something we have researched already on, and the intermedia metaphor is being conducted when features of one medium are transferred to another. With this concept, we are referring to Ernst von Glasersfeld's concept of abduction, which is a process of creative innovation, more or less. And Glasersfeld says that the abduction from features from one medium to transferring them to another medium is an abductive process and is a process which gives us new ideas, respectively innovations. I've chosen two examples, and then we come to the end already, for this abductive metaphor process. One piece is a painting by Elke Christofek from 2006. It's called Victims' Voices Independent. It's an acrylic painting showing a self-portrait of the artist surrounded by script. And what we can observe here as a intermediate metaphor can be observed, can be, let's say the most interesting thing of this piece is that this woman has, or the self-portrait, has a sentence written around her décolleté. And this sentence says, why as a woman would you address violence and not jewelry? So this, of course, would open up a lot of discussions about the content of the sentence, but I will not do this now because this is irrelevant to what we are researching. For us, relevant is the intermediate transfer from painting as a source domain to script as a target domain. And this leads us to the fact that Christofek arranges this sentence like a necklace around the woman's neck. So she addresses jewelry in the content of the sentence, but she also designs it as a jewelry or as a necklace around the woman's neck. So this gives us some new information about script or features of script, like a sentence is like a necklace because it's constructed of joined elements, beads. The sentence is constructed of letters, like a necklace is constructed of beads, and the letters have a similar function in the sentence as beads would have in a necklace. So it's the single elements. And what we also can learn about the painting here is that jewelry has qualities for ornamental functions on a body. That's something we know from anthropological studies, but also we learned that script has ornamental functions, a fact we can observe throughout the evolution of script. This means that script is not only something which we can observe as print or handwriting in a notebook or in a book, but we can script also observe as jewelry on a body. This is one example for an intermediate and a clapper. The second example I choose is a piece by Waldi Export from 1968. It's a circa one minute video with the title Visual Text Finger Poem. The video's title already refers to the media it deals with, namely visuality, text, body and poetry. But I will cut down my analysis to two media domains now, namely gesture and script. The video shows the artist while signing with her fingers and hands a sentence, and to understand the sentence better, at the end of the video, the sentence is inserted, written, and it says, Ich sage, die Zeige mit Zeichen im Zeigen der Sage frei nach Martin Heidegger. That's what she's signing. So, of course, you can't translate the sentence now as it's a German pun itself. But to inform you a bit about it, it has to do with the reconstruction, respectively, construction and invention of new words in the semantic context of telling, showing, pointing, and signing. So here we have four stills from the video showing the artist forming the letters in sign language A, which is the first one, Z, no, that's G, S, and Z. So the most obvious analogy between script, gesture and script is that reading is watching, of course. Both have aspects of scanning, observing forms within a certain amount of time and with the involvement of eye and body movement. Here again we have this performing the perceiving of forms by means of performing something. The same applies to gesturing and writing, which means that writing has features of gesturing. For instance, it takes time to draw the pencil over a sheet, as it takes time to form signs, which implies that it also has a strong connection to bodily involvement. And third, last not least, very obvious, of course, a pencil functions like hands, means that there again body qualities are involved. Like, for instance, we learn about a pencil that a sense of touch or the function of a limb are involved in using a pencil. So this is what we were doing, is just one point of the one field of our research project. And to come to an end, I just would like to offer you at last one more communication offer to maybe think about. I'm sorry, this one, to try to observe how this artwork works as an aesthetic offer within an aesthetic system between artist, recipient and artwork. This is Bruce Nauman's 100 Live and Die from 1984. It's neon tubings mounted on four metal monoliths. That's what the material aspect of it is. And I thank you very much for your attention. And if there are any questions, we can discuss this now.
Well, thank you so much, Katharina, for this inspiring lecture. Are there some questions?
Krista asked me to give you a list of books afterwards, so I can, of course, send it and provide to the class if you're interested in more theoretical research on this.
Do you have a publication of this concrete?
Not yet, no. I'm working on it.
Yes, as Katharina mentioned, we try to buy the books that she recommends us for the university library. So either they will be at the Hauptplatz or in our library where the book is purchased. I think we all need more time to think.
Maybe. Yes, I know, it's very complex. I tried to cut it down, but it's, of course it's always in the
book. You mentioned that artwork needs knowledge.
Hi.
Needs knowledge.
What would you say? I would say no, of course not. You have to have some knowledge, at least how to hold, I don't know, a brush. Let's do it the traditional way. Or you have to know about you have to know about materials. You have to know about media. You have to know about forms. How to make something. How to conceive something and how to make something.
Couldn't we say that showing the aesthetic know-how that obviously all the artists have in some way is the job of media art art historians in general, to show us the aesthetic know-how that goes into these works and transpose that maybe in a written form to the recipient?
Yes, I mean, our institute is a systemic media research institute, but of course media research always has to do with aesthetics also, because every form, every formed medium, so to say, is an aesthetic aspect or has aesthetic aspect. So that's what we are trying to do. Our question is, how exactly are artists doing this? What are they doing exactly, point by step by step? And for instance, how are they doing it with language? Of course, art historians, should do it also. That's something which is be done maybe sometimes. I mean, Siegfried Schmidt, he's not an art historian, he's also a media or communication scientist. He's dealing a lot with art also and with aesthetics, and he's also trying to work on this in other fields, not in the language field so much.
When you say one of your main questions is how do artists use language in different media, it's not just language as language, but language could be also a kind of visual language.
Right. It's like I've showed before, speech is a language media, but gesturing also is a language media, or programming languages are language media which you use to then write an algorithm. Mm-hmm. So only when it's the algorithm you can observe it, not the program itself as an abstract, more or less. So we are trying to observe different language media in different language forms. So if, for example, we have chosen your work typewriter as a so-called interactive artwork with an interface, but we also have like Elke Christofek's very, it's not traditional, but with the media tradition, acrylic painting. Yeah? It's not traditional in the form, but with materials maybe. And we also have music, a rap song by Abtwänger, for example, who we interview, and how are they using language and music together, for example. And how is he using speech, sing, song.
Could you elaborate again? I noted down here this difference between language media and language form. I'm not exactly sure if I understood.
Okay, let me show you this.
Language media and language form.
Let me show this. The main concept is in the constructivist thinking that, and this comes very strongly from Luhmann, that a medium itself cannot be observed at all. So voice, you cannot observe. You can only observe it as soon as it is, for example, spoken speech, a sentence you say, or an elocution or whatever, or as soon as it's a rap song or an opera song or whatever, or as soon as somebody is crying, help, help, or whatever. But voice as a medium you can observe only when it's formed, more or less, then you can observe. It's the same is true for print. Print as print cannot be observed. It can only be observed as, let's say, a newspaper, a novel, a flyer, whatever. So the one is the medium and the other is the form. So that's the difference. And would you agree that programming language is the medium and a certain genetic algorithm is the form of the programming language then?
I have a question. I read very few contents about Luhmann, but I know mostly that he take out the subject of his theory.
And what's that?
Subject, human being, like subject.
Yeah.
Subject.
Yeah.
I have doubts of it's possible to fit artwork with the psychic system with his theory, considering that he takes human beings out.
Yes.
So
they're not part of the system. They're coupled, what I said at the beginning, through they're structurally coupled, and that's a good question, right? The psychic system, it's a very theoretical concept, I know, but the psychic system, which we all are psychic systems, is coupled with the social system art, for instance, through cognition. Yeah, we produce communications in the art system through our cognitive and psychic abilities. That's the structural coupling. And the art system, for instance, offers us, again, a new innovation or irritation through its media offers. And they, of course, lead to changes, yeah. They lead to changes in our cognition, in our psyche. So that's where the psychic and the social system are coupled, according to Luhmann.
Yeah. I need to read.
It's very complicated, I know, and this is why I'm not really going too deep into it. But for me, interesting is always this interaction part and concerning aesthetic communication offers, which is different from everyday communication offers.
How wise would you define the language? For example, would you consider a diagram also part of a language media?
Yes, a diagram would
be, I would say, when there is print language in it or text in it.
So you're focusing, because in all those examples you focus on text in different forms.
Yeah, it's not only text, but it's language. What did you say?
A diagram
would be for me a graphic media. But of course, then mixed when you have text in it with print or if it's handwriting. So an image itself is not what we call language. Of course, it's something which is a communication offer. But this is something the difference between a verbal or language communication and non-language communication. For us, it's important to focus on, so that we can at least focus on the small part of the whole huge research field. Because I think in visual or even more in acoustic pieces or acoustic communication offers, it's so complex that you can't really differentiate the elements of the forms and so on if you're not a total expert.
For example, the language
sometimes that's a metaphor which is very, very usual, which is very true, I think, because probably you wouldn't say the communication of, I would say it's the communication of architecture, but nobody says it, so language itself is a metaphor, or is used as a metaphor.
We don't have many questions, is that we still think about what
we have. Okay, I mean,
many communication ideas.
Yes, I can send you, of course, the handouts of the, the lecture if you want to, and if there are any questions further on, please don't hesitate to send me an email or ask me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Katharina, for the really inspiring lecture, and we hope you come back again.
Yeah, thank you very much. My pleasure.
Your email address?
Okay.
Yes, we see. Yeah.